I'm excited to be here because we're covering the Macho Man Randy Savage. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's it. Just go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. I just think I'm going, uh-huh.
Well, you, uh-huh. You want me to keep going on the Macho Man Randy Savage impression, Jake? You want
uh-huh.
me to? You want me to rise to the top? Is that what you want? You want me to show everybody that I'm head and shoulders above you two in my Macho Man impression? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Listen here, Mean Gene. I got some thoughts on Palestine and Israel.
Oh, no, Mean Gene. Oh, no, Mean Gene. Don't cut the live feed, brother. Don't need to go over that.
That's right, I got a very grunty, very slow, you're very subdued. Everybody wants to do Macho Man over the top! I like to do Macho Man down low, like I do all my impersonations. Kinda in that down low sense, that intimate moment. You know one of those things, when you're at a bar, and up against somebody, and you're talking to them, and you're feeling that vibe, you know? You're feeling that vibe, and like, hey, you know, I got a hotel room over here, I got a key card. You wanna slide on, come on upstairs with me. You gotta put the key card up against the hotel, like little thing, and then you push the button, because you just push the button, it don't work that way. But I'm just saying, maybe you come up there and push my buttons. That's what I'm saying. Take my elevator all the way to the top. That's what the Macho Man's saying. Great metaphors, sexual innuendos. That's what I'm all about. Macho Man style. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hello, and welcome to the main event of season 4, scheduled for 4 episodes. I'm Nick Alexander, joined by a guy whose last name is a slang term for erection, Tyler Wood.
Hey, thanks, Nick.
That third voice you hear is a guy who is the cream of the crop because his dad was a farmer and raised him to be such, the Man Scout Jake Batty.
As a son of a farmer, I don't know what really would constitute a cream of a crop. Like, I know my dad drives a combine, but he's never, like, scooped up, like, here's the cream. Like, because my dad was not a dairy farmer, so I'm guessing that's a dairy farmer reference. I don't know. As we'll find out, Macho Man is a Midwest guy, so maybe he heard that a lot. I don't know. But, yeah, four-parter. It's a four fall to a finish, which means it's real 50-50 booking around here at 10 Bell Pod. No winner will be declared. The only winner is you, the listeners.
Everyone has their own GOAT list or their own Rushmores. In my head, I separate it into 3 categories because there's too many variables throughout the 140 years plus of wrestling history not to. There's the GOAT, because they were needle movers, and they defined their generation, and that takes you straight to Hogan, Austin, and then you can start making cases for The Rock, Gorgeous George, Cena, Bruno, Flair, Harley. Then there is the best actual in-ring wrestler, if that's what GOAT means to you. Probably the hardest list to debate. Always gonna be Eddie or Shawn for me. You can get into all caps rage paragraph fights over easily 20, 30 people, new and old, across the globe. But then there is the GOAT of GOAT list, the God tier. Like, who had it all? Who doesn't need a qualifier? Because they transcended the sport. They had the looks, the promos, the accomplishments, the longevity, the in-ring ability, unforgettable storylines, and just gave the industry more credibility as an art form. And at the peak of the best of the best, at the vanguard of pro wrestling immortality, one man sits unchallenged, unrivaled, at the pinnacle of the fucking mountain. A wrestler who has reached what I can only describe as some sort of pro wrestling sainthood. Inarguably, unquestionably, objectively, the greatest wrestler of all time, the Macho Man Randy Savage.
The tower of power, too sweet to be sour, I'm funky like a monkey, sky's the limit. I'm talking about the beat goes on, yeah, and the beat goes on, yeah, and the beat goes on. What it is what it is. time distortion. Space is the place, Mean Gene Okerlund. Go down that lonesome highway, yeah. But don't be hypnotized, no. Reincarnation doesn't have to be. You can concentrate and you can mental telepathy, yeah.
But the beat goes on.
But the beat goes on.
Nick, I am so glad that in your list of greatest of all times, you mentioned Gorgeous George. Fantastic set of tits. It's so great that you mentioned two people on the same list that have fucked each other. So I'm looking forward to getting into that later down the line. Really great job summing it all up, Nick. Macho Man Randy Savage, one of the greatest of all time, and wrestled between 1974 and 2004. That is 30 years. Wrestled a total, according to Cage Match, so asterisk, but we have documented 2,190 matches, and jeez, all of them in some way or another, except for the TNA one, magical.
I think you most certainly nailed it that, like, whatever your qualifier is for, like, best ever, like, Macho Man can fall in it, maybe promo guy, in-ring performer, guy who transcends the business, drawing money, whatever you want to put on your qualifier for greatest of all time, Macho Man falls somewhere on that list in everybody's top 10 very much, and a lot of top fives in each one of those. You know, if you're a child of the 80s, there might be a sense like, well, Hulk Hogan was the guy. I mean, he was basically like Babe Ruth in that sense that he was such a transcendent star, but I don't think anybody looks upon Hulk's in-ring matches at the same degree that Macho Man is. Maybe some of the kids of the 80s look at Macho Man as a second banana, but you're right. In his passing and in people rediscovering and podcasts like this, interviews like this, and video footage just coming to life and being surfaced for everybody to see now and streaming, and people are starting to see how incredible Macho Man is. He's really become a wrestling saint in a sense of this thing that is this much more than a wrestler, and I think that's only going to grow over time as we get further and further down the line, much in the same sense that we talk about somebody like a Luthez, like, oh, Luthez, you know, old time, old school, legit wrestler. I think as we get further down the line, people are going to start thinking of 80s wrestling. And instead of immediately going to Hulk Hogan, I think a lot more people are going to start going right to Macho Man Randy Savage, because he was as close as you're going to get to a perfect professional wrestler.
Funny that you bring up people going back and rewatching some things, Jake, because the amount of people that when I talk about professional wrestling, like, there's some pushback, or, you know, they're like, well, you know, I didn't really watch anything. Two people come up to those people that are kind of like, well, I didn't really watch it, but you know who's cool? One of them's Ric Flair, and they'll follow it up with a woo. And if it's not that, more often than not, it's Macho Man Randy Savage, followed by, they're all awful. Everyone heard ours in the beginning of this episode. They're all awful impressions, but people try to embody him because he brought such a, I don't even know the word for it. Like, he just brings you in with the personality and the promos of like, what the fuck am I watching here? I don't know what this is, what this man is on, but I know this is special.
I've always had this sort of thought in my head. I wanted to see what you guys think about it. If Hulk Hogan was just never born, Macho Man would have been Hulk Hogan, right? We've already established much better in the ring. He has the same amount of charisma. You can argue back and forth if he's better on the mic. Like, is Macho Man Hulk Hogan if Hulk Hogan isn't there?
I think he replaces, yes. I think he would completely, like, he could drop him in that same Hulk Hogan spot, but then obviously you've got to keep him as the good guy forever. We still got these looming bad guy opportunities, which he would never get to because, like, this is our cash cow. We got to keep putting him out there. But you're kind of seeing it now as Hulk Hogan opens his mouth more and more and more, and we want to erase him from our memory, that all of a sudden the memory of Macho Man gets put in the front of everybody's minds. Like, yeah, you know who doesn't lie every time he gets in front of a microphone? Macho Man Randy Savage. He always told me the truth every time. Where Hulk Hogan, every time, indubitably, there's always something that you're like, man, I like this guy less. I'm going to forget him a little bit more. And all of a sudden, your childhood memories of wrestling turn into much more Macho Man memories. And like I said, I think over time, as Hulk Hogan lives on and does more disgusting things, we will get to that point that Macho Man will overtake that in most everybody's minds. At least we can all hope.
Having lived through it, you guys can tell me better than I could probably tell you. Was Macho Man, this is the impression I got, was he the first heel that was cool to like?
Ooh. Yeah. To a mainstream crowd, I'm going to maybe say, yeah. I'm sure there were some territory guys who were super, just so badass and awesome. But like on the global stage, who would have been before Macho Man? Maybe Bruiser Brody.
Mm-hmm.
Probably Ric Flair. You could put in that
yeah,
category.
Yeah, Flair's up there. Yeah, that makes sense.
You got to kind of put Ric Flair in that because people want to act like Ric Flair. I mean, there's still 56-year-old men who wish they were Ric Flair, even today, with how Ric Flair acts as well, too.
Piper, maybe?
Yeah, maybe even Piper, yeah. Too. He had a bit of a swag about him. But yeah, probably those are your only two. Because, I mean, I remember I grew up, and he was always like, Piper was the bad guy, Hulk was the good guy. I liked Piper. Mm-hmm. So Piper might have been the first only by a couple of years in the WWF, but see, I think of Macho Man more as like a good guy than I do a bad guy, even though he was like one of the best bad guys ever.
What a class there too. It's weird the heels that people liked back then, like that group of Flair, Piper, and Macho Man. It's like, yeah, Hulk was the best. Who gives a shit? But those three, those are people that wrestlers attribute for the reason that they became wrestlers. Everyone's like, yeah, I like Hulk Hogan as a kid, but fucking Roddy Piper, man, the things that he made me feel, the things that Macho Man made me feel.
To fully get into the story of the Macho Man Randy Savage, let's set the stage by first showing you where he came from. A man that would directly affect Randy's life personally, emotionally, inspirationally, genetically. Randy's hero, mentor, and father, Angelo Poffo. Angelo John Poffo was born April 10th, 1925, near Chicago in Downers Grove, Illinois, the son of Italian immigrants fresh from old country. Angelo joined the Navy in 1945 during World War II, and just as a summary of the pure intensity and insanity mixed with physical prowess that Randy would inherit, while in the Navy, Angelo set the world record for setups, doing 6,033 in 4 hours and 10 minutes on the 4th of July, 1945.
So his dad was crazy.
As everybody who was born in the 20s, especially of immigrants, it's a different breed of human being we may never see again. There's a little thing that I always want to be fair, but I just saw this on social media today. And I've seen this many a times. It was like a 125-pound male sitting on one of those tables at the airport where you put a laptop down and he's like kind of sitting cross-legged a little bit, like on the stool. And somebody took a picture from this person behind and goes, men used to go to war. And I'm like, yeah, those people were different though. Like you, sir, who are posting on social media and bitching about shit, those men who did went to war would slap the shit out of you as well. So don't act like you're of that class because those individuals all had tendon strength and could crush apples with their hands. They were different folk, different human beings, and there were skinny little fucks and they didn't go to war and they made a shitload of money on banking while everybody was dying overseas. So don't act like this is just a new occurrence.
I also love that a metric for, basically, he was calling the guy gay. The metric for calling somebody gay is just being able to cross your legs now, like having flexibility in your hips. That's it.
And you don't know what that guy's working on the laptop. He's probably working or editing a TV show that you really like. So if this guy doesn't work on this, or it's a financial thing that is being solved, or some sort of code that you're going to write on a stupid fucking app that's being created that you're going to bitch about people sitting cross-legged about. So fuck off.
Following his time LARPing the board game Battleship, Angelo took his sweet six-pack to DePaul University. Like Randy, Angelo was quite the baseball player, also playing catcher, and was good enough to play for DePaul, while at the same time studying physical education. It was at DePaul University that Angelo met his eventual wife of 61 years and mother of Lanny and Randy, Judy. Judy was a collegiate competitive swimmer and diver, so maybe that's where Macho got his high flying from. Angelo and Judy married in 49, the same year Angelo would launch his career as a professional wrestler.
See, this is what I always hoped with my parents. Like, I used to get so mad at my father. I was like, why couldn't you fall in love with a gymnast? Like, you fell in love with my mother who has no athletic ability whatsoever.
He's also like, why couldn't I fall in love with a gymnast?
Exactly. He was like, he's like, same, bro. Same. Like, I married this woman who is feisty as all get out, which probably made me a good promo. But at the same time, too, like, we diluted the athletic ability that I have in my family now because of that.
Angelo was trained by Carl Pagello, a man born in Lithuania into the Russian Empire. And in Russian Empire, bumps take you.
Is that your Yakov Smirnoff reference that you were hoping for? Is that what you were looking for? I mean, what a country. I come over. I find Italian. I teach him fall down million times. He has two sons. They millionaires. What a country. Is that more what you were fishing for in your Yakov Smirnoff reference? Because you were tiptoeing around it and you wanted somebody to dive all the way in? Well, it did. There you go.
Thank you. Is his name a pun from throwing up on vodka?
Oh, shit. I don't know.
Yakov Smirnoff? Yakov Smirnoff, I drink it enough.
Well, the country. Everybody have the Smirnoff, the Yakov. And that's how I get my name.
Carl was one of the best amateur wrestlers in Russia, but eventually made his way to the pros in Chicago in 1924. And Chicago was always a good wrestling city. If you remember, that's where Gotch and Hackenschmidt met in 1911 in front of 30,000 people. Carl worked with people like Deck Zbyszko, Toots Mott, and Jim Londos, who was kind of like the Hulk Hogan of the 30s and 40s, popularity-wise, not the other stuff. I mean, probably the other stuff. He was a white dude in the 40s. By the 40s, Carl was aging out, complaining about spot monkeys doing drop toe holds, and he started training. So all that rich, early wrestling history was downloaded into Angelo, who blended it with his own experience and passed it down to his sons.
If you've ever seen the Lainey Poffo shoot, Lainey would always talk about like these wrestlers from the 40s. Like, oh, this guy, he was such a big deal and star. And like, he'd always reference some very like old school wrestler. And he would talk about conversations that him and Randy would have. Like, you know, when Lainey was trying to build the genius gimmick, they were referencing guys who wrestled in the 40s and 50s. And, you know, you should do this or do that. Or, yeah, that'd be good. Remember this guy was a big deal in Chicago in the 50s, and he did a cartwheel after this. You should do that, Lainey. Like, the way they would build stuff and talk about old school stuff. So you have such a rich foundation of where wrestling came from. I mean, you think of any great wrestler, they understand where wrestling came from the absolute roots of it, and built from here to here, and then the building blocks of it. Then once you know the building blocks of it, you can get to the more advanced stuff.
Angelo's first match is in 49, and from there, he's like a steady working territory wrestler. He turned heel in 50, and he hit all the usual cities, although a lot of them aren't quite what we know them as. Like, AWA is Minneapolis Boxing and Wrestling. St. Louis is Sam Munchnick Sports Attractions.
But also, too, there was like, Buffalo had its own territory. You could run Buffalo as like the big town, and then a couple other towns, and there were so many people going to it. As a live attraction, you could make money off of wrestling three or four times a week. Like, each town had their major promotion, and they were bringing people in and out of the territory and cycle them out in bigger attractions. And you could just kind of bounce from city to city, and it'd be a completely different territory. So you literally could take the same match and put it in a different territory the next day and work in between. You just had wrestlers that lived in different places. And then, you know, if you lived outside of where, if you lived in a different town than the territory you were wrestling in, you could just be Angelo, a nice father of two boys mowing his grass. And then, you know, the neighbor comes up like, hey, you know, my lawnmower's in the shop. Can I borrow yours? And Angelo's like, yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. I'll be wrestling a Texas death match next week in Louisville, Kentucky. So I'm going to be gone for an entire week. You go ahead and just bring it back whenever. No rush. I don't need to get to this until I get back from my Texas death match in Louisville, Kentucky.
Angelo did a run in 1952 in MWA, Midwest Wrestling Association, out of Ohio. November 15th, 52, he and Judy had their first son, Randy Mario Poffo, who was born in Columbus, Ohio.
It's-a-me, Mario!
Jesus Christ. Then in 54, during a run in Big Time Wrestling in Canada, they had their second son, Lanny, December 28th in Calgary. Lanny will eventually get his own episode, assuming we make it to, like, I don't know, season 8. But he is a fountain of knowledge on Macho Man. And before his own passing in 2023, he was a huge part of keeping that memory alive, arguably at the expense of his own wrestling legacy, which isn't too shabby itself.
He's an odd cat overall, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Interesting guy. Every time I see him, I'm like, is that what Macho Man would look like without a beard? Like, every single time.
Thank God we'll never know. Rest in peace, all of you.
I love that you guys are just beating around the bush. He's an interesting guy because he can suck his own dick. Like,
wait, what?
You don't know the story about Lanny Poffo sucking his own dick?
Well, that takes a genius to do that, doesn't
it? That's all I know about, but like, that's like the first, like, Lanny Poffo was the genius. He also can suck his own dick. He was so flexible, and he was well endowed, apparently, that he could just get himself to a point, and he would do it in a locker room to kind of weird people out.
What?
And so, like, Harley Race thought this is the most amusing thing ever. So, like,
fucking weird, dude.
Yeah, they are. Every last one of us are fucking weird. Yeah, everybody's like, oh, wrestlers just want to play video games. Yeah, but at least we aren't sucking our own dick in the locker room to pop people. But, like, Harley Race one time at a Legend convention in 2006 walked right over to Lanny Poffo and goes, hey, Lanny, can you still suck your own dick? And obviously Lanny's like, you know what he looked like later in life. And Lanny's like, I'm not as flex as I used to be. I can get close.
It's so funny that wrestlers do it metaphorically to no end. And then Lanny comes in and he goes, whoop. And everyone just stops what they're doing. That's what I'm imagining.
So kind of just wrapping up the highlights on Angelo. He was more than a capable territory wrestler. Not sure how flexible he was. He picked up the NWA US title, the Chicago version, in 58 and 66. He was managed by Bobby Heenan, and he worked against and with people like Bobo Brazil, Fritz Von Erich, Nick Bockwinkel, Tully's dad, Joe Blanchard, Harley Race, Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr., and a man whose hobby is organizing stamps in alphabetical order, Wilbur Snyder.
Show him some goddamn respect. Like, if you want to see a territorial wrestler shooter badass, that's Wilbur Snyder.
We got to cover him one day so I can get this out of my system.
You've got to get past it, because you're gonna have a brand new appreciation for him. Chiseled out of stone, my friend. Chiseled out of stone. But you just listed off a whole bunch of people right there that there's kind of this weird thing that when I first got into wrestling, a lot of second generation wrestlers got pushed to the front of the line, and I remember having so much resentment to some of them until I realized that I did it myself, like when Steve Corino's son started to wrestle, and I was very good to Colby a lot, and like, oh, I'd give him a lot in a match, make sure he was always taken care of, speak up for him with bookers, and all of a sudden I realized, like, oh, well, they're just good to Mr. Perfect's kid because Mr. Perfect was good to them, much like Steve Corino was good to me, so I'm being good to his son. So it's just returning the favor. And I was like, I get it now. I get why this is happening. It's not fair to everybody to get passed over by a second generation wrestler, especially when the second generation wrestler really doesn't care about wrestling at all. That's not great. But then sometimes they turn out to be a Charlotte Flair or a Randy Orton. So I get it.
Or a Manu. It's funny that you say that there's this weird feeling between second generation wrestlers coming into the business. And we've all seen it where, like, guys are getting opportunities on TV that we know they wouldn't be getting if they weren't where they are. They also have to deliver. But something that came up in the biography episode that WWE produced, and boy, is that thing not 100% accurate. But they brought up something about how Macho had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Obviously, we're getting a little bit ahead of this, but I feel like it's relevant what we're talking about. He had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder that Hulk came in, not from the business, and made it to the top and was making a lot of money and outdoing Macho by just that little bit. And he's like, I was born into this. I was made for this. I should be the top guy instead of Hulk. There was some bit of that.
What? That's the sound of a rattlesnake in your earbuds. That's right, if you didn't want the stone cold Steve Austin experience, you need to shut them earbuds off right now. As a matter of fact, why don't you just take them ears and rip them off? Because if you don't want stone cold talking to you, then you don't deserve ears. Rangers. Can I get a hell yeah? I'm gonna go ahead and assume you said it. I'm here today because I want to tell you about my friends over at Tin Bell Pod. Tin Bell Pod, Tyler Wood, Nick Alexander, and Jake, the Man Scout Man, and bringing you some of the best wrestling content on the internet. Now can I get a hell yeah? While you're giving me a hell yeah, why don't you go ahead and pop over to their Patreon, go ahead and give a subscription, and why don't you hop your fat little ass right over to Pro Wrestling Tees and get a Tin Bell Pod exclusive t-shirt featuring all three of these beautiful men. Might be saying, what? What? Stone Cold, you think these men are beautiful? Goddamn it, I do. Now you get over there and you buy that t-shirt before I stomp a mud hole in you and walk it dry. Now let me get a hell yeah.
Macho Kid Randy Poffo. Obviously, the son of a wrestler, did a lot of moving in his early days, but the family eventually did settle down in Angelo's home turf, Downers Grove, Illinois. Mom Judy said that this was about when Randy was in the fourth grade and Lenny was in the second grade.
Well, let me talk about this. I'm waiting for us to get to this point. This is a story that I don't know if I've told anybody before. And I had forgotten about this story until doing a little bit of research for this podcast.
Jake, did you suck Lanny Poffo's dick one time?
I saw it. It was the right way. No, when I first started wrestling, it was in Springfield, Illinois. And the wrestling school that I went to, New Midwest Wrestling, was in the back of a gymnastics gym. It was also like this community center where they had basketball. And then they also had a little weight room in the front where like moms would come work out. And then they have an aerobics room. And part of the allure of going to the wrestling school is like, hey, you can come go to the wrestling school and have access to the facilities here. So I'm like, great. Like I can show up early to wrestling class, get a weight workout in, and then go have wrestling training. So one of the days I was in there just kind of getting a little bit of a workout in before I did wrestling training, one of the local community moms was in there working out. She saw I had a wrestling t-shirt on. And she goes, are you a part of the school that's in the back of this community center? I go, yes, I am, ma'am, I am. And she's like, oh, I grew up with a wrestler. And when people say that, and especially now as I've lived in the Mid-Atlantic region where Jim Crockett Promotions and every outlaw show that's ever existed, you know, when somebody says, oh, I grew up with a wrestler, or I knew a wrestler, it's always like, oh, I know Chad Austin. You know who Chad Austin is? Or I grew up with the Assassin Number 3. You know who he is? Or you ever heard of the Metal Maniac? Like, it's always just some outlaw of outlaw guys. So even then, I'm kind of expecting that, you know, somebody to be like, oh, I grew up with a wrestler. I'm like, oh, yeah, who'd you grow up with? She goes, Lanny Poffo and the Macho Man Randy Savage. I go, what? Tell me more. She goes, yeah, I grew up in Downers Grove, just a few doors down from them. And she used to go over to the Poffo's house because they would have like parties with all the families and like all the other neighborhood kids. They would have the neighbor kids over because they were the first family on the block to get a color television set. Because Angelo was making so much money wrestling that he was able to afford a color television set. So everyone wanted to come over to the Poffo's and watch color television. She goes, I was really kind of more Lainey's age, but my, you know, Randy was around. Yeah, and then I was so amazed that they went on to have such great success. So I'm like, how crazy is it that the neighborhood kids up the street that you grew up with end up being the stars that they are in the 80s? Like, that would be just absolutely mind-blowing. That'd be like saying, I went to grade school with Taylor Swift. It just unbelievable and amazing. And it was just very interesting that was one of, like, my early memories of training wrestling is meeting this person who grew up with Macho Man Randy Savage.
You should have pulled the, like, I never heard of him.
So Randy idolized his dad and his wrestling career, loving the business from day one. But as Randy grew, he was carving out his own spot in the world of athletics. He did all the sports, basketball, football, track and field. But as tons of wrestling fans know, baseball was the Macho Man's first calling. You can find some interviews on documentaries of people back in the day saying they knew Randy was going to be special in baseball. From his Little League days, he was a catcher and would throw the ball back to the pitcher with like more heat on it than the pitcher had. High school, his junior year, Randy batted 520. And then his senior year, just for fun, he decided to switch hit and still hit 500. I'm not like that into baseball and definitely not an expert, but that's fucking crazy. That's like averaging 40 or 50 in basketball. Out of high school, Randy entered the MLB draft. Randy was born in 52, 18 years to graduate. That's putting us around 70-ish. Wikipedia is turning into my version of Eric Bischoff complaining about Dave Meltzer. So I'm fucking Wikipedia. It says he went to Southern Illinois College. However, athletic director of Southern Illinois said, I spoke to Gene Green from the SIU Alum Association, and he cannot find any record of Randy Poffo in the alumni database. He contacted Southern Illinois Eastern to no avail. Several other units on campus have checked out with admissions and records about Poffo's degree information. There's no record of him playing baseball for SIU. Add to it, Randy was in pro baseball in 71 at 18, 19 years old. And then after baseball, he went straight into wrestling. So was he taking fucking online classes as Intercontinental Champion, you assholes?
I was just doing a little bit of auditing. Yeah, just a lifelong learner. Real passionate about learning facts, yeah.
That's why I came out to Pomp and Circumstance. Because I was such a graduate and knowledgeable individual. I walked in 17 graduations. I didn't even have a degree.
My brother stole my fucking gimmick, yeah.
Randy went undrafted in the MLB draft, and yeah, that sucks, but he didn't give up. Randy went to a free agent camp in St. Louis, and out of 300 people that showed up, Randy was signed. Randy was signed by the St. Louis Cardinals organization as a catcher and placed in the minor leagues to develop with the Gold Coast League Cardinals. Again, I don't know enough about baseball, especially minor league baseball, that seems to be this like ever-flowing roster of several farm systems. But the franchises Randy is most associated with seems to be St. Louis Cardinals, Cincinnati Reds. Add to this, Macho Man began dating Barbara Lynn Payne, who he met while walking on Lido Beach in Sarasota in 1972. Seems like a random note, but she will come back into play in a couple more episodes. It was also in baseball that Randy got the name Macho Man, because sometimes teams will get into bench-clearing fist fights. You gotta keep yourself entertained during those nine-hour baseball games. And even then, Macho was very badass. He wasn't shy about throwing a punch, throwing an elbow. So they started calling him Macho Man. There's all kinds of rumors and theories of where he got that name from, but Randy himself said this more than once.
As we know, Macho Man just being this explosive personality, for him to have the patience to play baseball for 180 games, like where it just takes a toll on you, like mentally, is hard to fathom. But at the same time, too, when you look at how much of a meat grinder professional wrestling is, especially WWF during the 80s, baseball was probably the thing that prepared him mentally the most, especially getting there, getting your uniform on. It's in, you're wearing polyester pants for hours upon hours in the hot sun, waiting for your opportunity to do something and go back down. I mean, that's kind of pro wrestling. You get there, you put your gear on, and you wait around for your opportunity to do your thing. You do it for 30 seconds and you're done, or you do it for a couple of minutes and you're done, and then maybe you go up again a little bit later and do them again if you're doing those multiple TV tapings. And Kevin Kelly told me this story one time, is that Macho Man, during that run of the 80s, he would get to the building before everybody else and he would get his gear on like first thing. So that way, if they ever needed to cut a promo with him, he's ready to go. Like, they could grab it any, like a drop of a hat, like, hey, Randy, are you ready? You're going to cut some promos. Are you ready? He'd be like, oh yeah, let me get my hat. You know, like, and he's right there. And he did that and everybody got so fucking pissed off, because kind of Vince saw that as like, well, Macho Man's ready to cut his promo, why aren't you, Rougeau's? Everybody hated it because like Randy was there before everybody else, he was in gear before everybody else, and he was always ready to go. So everybody were then told like, why can't you be like Randy and be ready to go at the drop of a hat? Like, Vince loved that shit. And all the guys were like, fuck, we gotta get here early and put our fucking gear on and just wait around to be ready. Where Randy, with his experience of being a baseball player, like, that's the job, you know, have uniform on, ready to go at a moment's notice to do your thing and then go sit back down again. So, because wrestlers just like to be lazy and do it all last minute and then be done and then move on with it.
I love that those guys blamed him like for fucking just be prepared. It's not that hard.
So if you take the intensity and passion and talent that Macho applied to pro wrestling, he was likely going to make it in baseball, but not too deep into his career, Randy did suffer a career-altering injury. Catchers are often like charged into from the base runner coming from third, where they basically just full speed running back, like smash into them, trying to get them to drop the ball so that they're not tagged out. And it was during one of those collisions that Randy suffered a right shoulder injury affecting his dominant hand. This fucking maniac just learned to throw left-handed, like at a professional level. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah, but from what I understand, he couldn't play catcher with that, but he was able to play other positions. But like his ability to throw people out at second was hindered, so he couldn't be a major league catcher. Good enough to play probably catcher in the minors. And you move somebody around like that to first base so he doesn't have to throw, but he can still throw to third if need be, but he doesn't have to throw as much. But like I said, like mentally, he's not in the game as much as he was because the catcher is basically the quarterback on the field. Like, he's dictating everything. Everybody wants to say it's the pitcher, but the pitcher's taking direction from the catcher. The catcher's getting directions in from the manager, who's he's the closest to out of everybody on the field. So, yeah, he's just not mentally as engaged. And also, too, like, as you said, he taught himself how to throw left-handed. Like, he's only been throwing left-handed baseballs for a couple of years, where he had been honing his right arm for years, and it is such a razor thin margin from minor leagues to majors that every advantage is needed and every disadvantage is just pushes you that further down.
Randy's last season was in 74 when he played for the Class A Tampa Tarpons of the Reds organization. After 4 years of grinding it out in the minor leagues, Macho Man was cut for the last time. And Randy had a hard breakup with baseball. He, like, destroyed his bats. He couldn't even watch it as a fan anymore. And so he decided to pivot entirely, including breaking up with the girl he'd been seeing, Lynn. From there, Randy would run into the loving arms of professional wrestling.
No, Macho Man just overreacted and threw everything in the trash can over the slightest rejection. I don't see Randy Savage just overreacting and be like, if I can't play baseball, baseball doesn't exist anymore. I don't see him being that type of person. No.
With that too, I think one of the reasons he got cut was because of his odd throwing stance, because he's not throwing with his natural hand. And like, were the Oakland A's not around at the time? Because that's, I've seen Moneyball, and that's like the fucking premise of it, is it not?
Well, see, Brad Pitt isn't born yet. So
I
if
see,
Brad
I
Pitt
see.
Would have been born, he would have been Chris Pratt. But see, just generationally, that's how that works out.
Gotcha.
So Randy's start in wrestling is a little cloudy. Lanny said that Randy's baseball contracts blatantly said no other sports, usually the case for professional sports, I guess, unless you're Deion Sanders. But it was while still playing baseball that Randy started working under a mask as the Spider, presumably in the offseason of 73. I couldn't find anything to back that up. Not saying like Lanny is wrong or lying, but there's nothing you can actually watch, which makes sense because he's doing it behind his baseball team's back, keeping a little hush-hush.
Oh, and heaven forbid the accuracy of 1974. House show results aren't on the internet, okay. Nicholas. So like, oh, they're not on the internet. They don't exist. Well, they fucking happened in reality, okay? So just because they're not on Cage Match doesn't mean that they're not real.
How awesome is that, that he's wrestling under a mask as the Spider? Fast forward 3 decades. He's wrestling the Spider in a major Hollywood movie.
Probably pull Tobey Maguire aside and be like, oh yeah, actually, this was my first gimmick, oh yeah.
You owe me money for this, brother.
Also, one thing that is for sure, while playing baseball, Randy would go watch Championship Wrestling of Florida, and Dusty Rhodes remembered him coming to a game because they would drive there still like in their jerseys. Point being, Randy always loved wrestling and was likely always going to get involved.
Well, also too, like I said, his dad made money, enough money to buy a color television set. So Randy was like, well, my dad knows how to do this. If I learn how to do this, I can make some money. Maybe something will happen. I'll be a big deal. Maybe I'll be like a main eventer someday. But if I really work at it and apply myself, I know how to do that as an athlete. So if I do that here as a professional wrestler, I can make some money doing it athletically. Because as we said, it joked around about like him being a scholar. I don't know if Randy was like, you know what? I'm going to go legit. I'm going to get a regular job. I don't think that was on the menu of things he was going to do with his life.
I'm calling you about your car's extended warranty.
I gotta quit doing that so much.
So Randy was trained by his dad, but Angelo gave him some really good advice that I think any creative or athlete should take, and that's learn from everyone, which he always did. And Randy is not just coming in from a sports background. He's coming in from, like, you know, fairly high achieving sports background, and he brought that exact mindset with him to wrestling. Watching tape, being a perfectionist, working tirelessly, and just like baseball was on his mind 24/7, now it was just wrestling.
And I think that's, and I say this, so like, fuck it, I can say it, because the people that are listening to this are fans of me, so I can toot my own horn a little bit. I can understand that, because my sport that I tried to be successful at and failed at, or it didn't work out for me, was shot putting, track and field. I was a collegiate shot putter, discus thrower, hammer thrower. And I can't tell you the countless hours of me throwing or putting a shot, you know, and just working on my throws and videotaping those throws, and like taking that 2 hours of footage of me throwing and then watching all 2 hours of that every single day. So not only am I doing the activity, then I'm going home at night and watching myself do it. You know, where's my arm at? Where's my head at? How can I make this better? All of those things, and then translating it into wrestling, where you're wrestling, watching tape of your matches, analyzing over and over again. And then obviously through my entire career, I edited just about every show I was on. So I saw 3 different camera angles of every match that I've ever had before. And then watching it over and over and over and over again, and just, you know, editing it and thinking about it, thinking about it on the ride home, editing, think about things I could do, my performances and my act, what can I do? And then watching it over and over and over again. That mentality of me being an athlete helped translate to me being as good as I am in the ring technically, which I feel like I, like, if you look at my fundamentals and my basics, I think I'm about as solid as anybody in that area. And that comes from just knowing how to take in knowledge that's being taught to me by a teacher, going out and doing the act, then taking the footage of that act, and then analyzing it over and over again, and then making the changes the next time I'm in that ring performing that particular maneuver. As an athlete, that's why it's important. And then, you know, we give a lot of criticisms to WWE finding athletes and then making them wrestlers. But, you know, people that have dedicated their lives as an athlete, they have that knowledge on how to do that. They just have to now take that particular motivation, that skill set of, you know, mentally and visually seeing what's wrong and correcting it. Athletes have that. And the higher degree of athlete, the higher degree that they were able to do that. In theory, some people are just freaks and they just get out there and they do it. They had no idea how they did it. But in theory, you're looking for somebody that has that particular knowledge. And you look at someone like Kurt Angle, who could easily jump into pro wrestling because he had that ability to take a look at his faults and where he was not doing and performing well, and how to correct that in the next training session, in the next match, and so forth.
Aside from learning like the nuts and bolts of, you know, being a pro wrestler, Randy set out to transform his body. Baseball back in the day, you didn't really have to look a certain way. Like, you can for sure be like a jacked fucking athlete and be a pro baseball player, but you can also look like a dad who's kind of given up. You can have the slenderest of builds. And Randy, for sure, here isn't like the Jack to the Gills WCW Randy. And here's where he starts like bulking up. He grows out his hair. He grows out his beard. By 1974, just like his father before him, Randy set out to work on the territories. And here he is for sure working as Spider, with his earliest findable match, December 3rd, 74, taking a loss to Jay Clay. He'd wrap up 74 and get through a chunk of 75 as the Spider, working out of Florida. And he's almost always taking the loss here. A slender fella in the land of the giants, working under a hood as Spider. So, you know, he's taking some L's up front.
Do you guys have opinions on the WWE biography by the Biography Channel? Have you watched them, right?
The A&E one, right?
Yeah. The first mention of wrestling, they're like, and he decided to go by the Macho Man Randy Savage. And I'm listening to it. I'm like, man, I haven't done a deep dive on this. This is how I'm getting into this. But I'm like, I know there's no fucking way you come in and you nail something like that. There's no fucking way. They were like, baseball to Macho Man. Not to mention some of the fucking people they interviewed for this. They have
Bubba the Love Sponge
and Hulk Hogan, and they're like throwing subtle jabs at each other. And then you've got Dan Soder. They don't even mention him as a comedian. No offense to Dan Soder, but what is he qualified to be speaking on this about? What in the fuck?
Yeah, Cornette rips it apart and points out a lot of the inaccuracies. It was just poorly done. They wanted the name Macho Man slapped on something because it's going to get eyeballs. Not saying that's what we're doing with a four-part episode on Macho Man. But yeah, they basically made a live action of the fucking Wikipedia page.
And let me say this. I want to befriend Hulk Hogan because he'll live longer than everybody else.
Immortal?
Yeah, he's immortal. And so that way, when I perish from this earth, Hulk Hogan can make fantastic lies about me and what I did. Things that are truly not factual whatsoever, even though he's got true stories that are absolutely incredible. Like if you've ever seen the story that's floating around Twitter where Wayne Gretzky and Hulk Hogan accidentally drove off with each other's cars because they went to the same mall and parked it in the same valet spot, and they drove off with each other's Christmas presents. That's a great fucking story, but Hulk's not going to tell it because it's fucking true. He'll tell a fucking lie before he tell an amazing story that's fucking true. And I hate the fact that we don't have Roddy Piper, we don't have Macho Man, and to some extent we don't have, less thrilled about, but that we don't have Ultimate Warrior. Ultimate Warrior was who he was, but he called Hulk out on his fucking bullshit. Those three men would constantly talk about, like, nope, that's not how it happened, he's a fucking liar. Now we don't have those men, so now all of a sudden, Joe Rogan's sitting down with Hulk Hogan, and Joe Rogan's like, well, these are facts, these are true, this is what wrestling history is, go forth, because now this is wrestling history.
You're telling me a true story. They had the epitome of a 1984 comedy movie with two of the biggest, or 1987, whenever the fuck, two of the biggest names in sports and entertainment at the time, Wayne Gretzky and Hulk Hogan. They drive off with each other's cars. We do a fucking Freaky Friday thing with that. Forget No Holds Barred. That's fucking ridiculous. This is money.
Yeah, it's a great story. Wayne was like just laughing about it because it's like he just drove home and then he opened up, looked in the shopping bags, but these are the presents that I got.
What are these sheets with holes in them? Why is this here?
Yeah, what's going on here? And then all of a sudden he gets a call from Hulk Hogan, who he's never met before. He's like, hey, this is Terry. And he's like, Terry who? He goes, Hulk Hogan, brother. Because they both lived in Sherman Oaks at the time. So then they had to meet up and exchange cars. If I get in a car, like I know that my iPhone charger cord is in there, mm-hmm. and this cord's at my sunglasses. These men like had such nice cars, and they don't put anything in them that they just drove off with them. It's nuts. But like that's a true story. Hulk Hogan's never talked about his friend Wayne Gretzky and told this fucking story, which is fucking amazing. And as you said, we could have had a whole buddy comedy movie based off this thing.
You botch 100% of the spots you don't take. Or whatever. All right. By April 75, Macho was up in Ohio's version of Big Time Wrestling, doing a little wrestling as Randy Poffo. And again, mostly losing. The coolest names I saw him work with up there were the Islanders, Afa and Sika. In 76, I'd imagine he's starting to look a little more polished, paying his dues a little bit. He starts grabbing some wins. And then by summer, he and Brother Lanny would head to Charlotte and start tagging in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling.
And apparently Lainey loved the women in Charlotte, as you've ever watched Lainey's shoot interview. And I guess this run would have lasted a little bit longer because they liked them there. But I guess Lainey hooked up with one of Ole's...
rats?
I was going to say regular companions, but if you want to use the derogatory term, okay, be a shitty human being.
What do they prefer? What's the correct term? Super fans?
Human being?
I mean...
consensual partner,
but that, yeah, that none of that isn't conveyed through the term rat. Just means they fuck the wrestlers, right?
I would never call a woman a rat that was like was willing to have sex with me.
I have chuckle like, fuckers, so I completely understand.
All right, well, somehow that's less offensive, I guess. or badge bunnies if you're a police officer.
Ooh,
too.
That's a fun one.
That's one I learned when I was dating a police officer.
10 Bellas.
10 Bells.
Ooh.
Ten Bells.
Ten Bells.
This is an awful segment.
This is terrible. Absolutely. I'm glad three straight white dudes are talking right now. But yeah, apparently Lainey hooked up with one of Oli's regulars. And that's kind of why they were like, oop, we need to get out of this territory.
So by this point, Randy and Lainey are full-time wrestlers. They're taking on people like Ronnie Garvin, Tony Atlas, Dino Bravo, Paul Jones, Rufus R. Jones, and Mr. Wrestling, you know, winning and losing throughout their tours. In 77, Lainey sort of hung out in Charlotte, but Randy went down to Georgia, and this is the first time you start seeing the name Randy Savage. In a 1993 interview, Randy said he used the name Savage because he didn't want to work off of his dad's name. It is also said that Ole gave him the name Savage, since Savage is for sure a word that Ole Anderson would use as a slur. Seems about right. Either way, Savage is worked in there because in and out of the ring, his style is that of a madman.
And it's funny to think that before Randy developed his body, like him being a 170-pound wild man around the ring, like this guy wrestles like a savage, but he probably had to do that to compensate for the size he did not have yet.
So in Georgia, Randy, again, he's working with some pretty cool names, Bob Backlund, Tommy Rich, David Von Erich, Bullet Bob. He ran back into Dino Bravo and Tony Atlas, just making a paycheck, getting some reps in, learning, but again, he is mostly losing. Kickoff 78, New Year. Next up was Nick Gulas, NWA Mid-America, where things were a little better. He had feuds with Pez Watley and Dutch Mantel, getting shots at the Mid-America heavyweight title. And this like era territory isn't like my strongest part of wrestling history, but I believe Dutch was like the fucking man in NWA Mid-America. So it's like he's kind of at the top-ish of a company. It's not Charlotte, it's not Florida, but he's up there. He's doing bigger things here. All right, and do you know anything about this? And I think it was working in this territory that he had a 1978 fight at a Waffle House.
Basically, as you do as wrestlers, you want something to eat because you just got done wrestling and you didn't eat before your match because you're all nervous and you want to make sure you know you'd have a belly full of mashed potatoes and whatever the hell. So you didn't eat much before you wrestled, and then you wrestle, and then you're coming down. Now you're hungry and you can't fall asleep. You know, and the only thing that's fucking open is Waffle House. So you stop into a Waffle House. And as I always heard the story, Randy had a long day, was tired, was irritable, and he goes into the Waffle House and people are talking loudly. Surprise, that's every fucking Waffle House on the fucking planet 24 hours a day. You got drunk people in there just being fucking loud, and Macho just wanted a little peace and quiet. So the guy who was the loudest in the fucking restaurant, he got up and punched that guy in the face and then sat back down and finished eating his fucking all-star fucking special. Now, the Dundee story I always heard was during the whole Outlaw promotion days, which we will get into, but since we're talking about it, I always heard it was when Dundee was coming out of the gym. For whatever reason, Randy and Lainey thought it'd be a good idea to get some promotion for their Outlaw promotion. I keep calling it Outlaw promotion, but like, I agree with Lainey. Like, if somebody opens a business as a competing business, are they an outlaw business? That's just competition because that's America because of capitalism. So I'm just going to call it an outlaw promotion just to keep it simple. But Lainey and Randy thought it'd be a good way to get some publicity locally if they beat up the rival promotion's top star.
That makes it an outlaw promotion. That's what does it.
Okay. And Randy and Lainey figured out where Dundee regularly went to work out. And they waited outside and they went to go jump him. But Dundee, just being heightened aware, territory heel, you know, for years, knew somebody was going to attack him in a parking lot. Just his spidey senses were tingling, realized the spider was near. So he went to go put his gym bag instead of the back seat in the trunk because he knew he had his gun in the trunk. So he opened the trunk, put the bag in, heard the footsteps running up to him, grabbed the gun, and then there was this tussle. And then the varying reports of what happened. Dundee says he pulled the gun out, and then Randy was like, ooh, back off. That's pretty much the consensus of what happened, was they were going to jump Dundee to get some headlines and start a whole angle. Even though they had this outlaw promotion, they were trying to get into the more predominant territory in the area. So, like, obviously, when they eventually went to go work for Memphis, like, Dundee wasn't too happy about it. Jerry Lawler had no problem with it because he wasn't the one that got jumped in a parking lot.
The stories from this time period are so nuts. And then in 30 years, this generation's shoot interviews are going to be like, yeah, he blocked me on Facebook. End of feud.
Can you believe AJ Styles was spawn camping on Call of Duty?
While Randy was doing a little better in Tennessee, he's not like the top guy. And with Randy's legacy, his intensity, his work ethic, he's not some like dumpy slob out there blowing spots. He's fucking Randy Savage. And Papa Poffo saw this. And with some big dad, if you ain't gonna play my boy, I'll start my own team energy, he started the Outlaw Mud Show Bullshit Promotion International Championship Wrestling in 1979. And I say Angelo started it, but Lanny made it very clear ICW was not just Angelo's. It was a third his, it was a third Randy's, and it was a third Lanny's.
This was also like a time where Randy was trying to make that next step. He was trying to be a main event guy. He was trying to break into the top of the card anywhere possible. And it's clear that he has the talent, the ability. He's finally formed this character now that's special. Like, we're starting to see the very beginning of Macho Man building steam as an act, a fully formed character. And he's just trying to break in everywhere, but nobody's giving him a shot at that top area. So he wants to show that he can be a top guy, so he creates a place where he can be a top guy, which that's the Hardys taught themselves how to wrestle in a backyard trampoline promotion. Ran their own shows where they got to do all the cool spots they saw on Japanese tapes, and they were able to get WWF contracts off of it. Same, the Young Bucks did it several years later. Multiple people have done a similar version of this before. It just, Poffo's did the Outlaw Wrestling Promotion version of it. You'd have, you know, Lainey host the entire wrestling program. You'd have Macho Man host, like, interview segments. Angela would be hosting the television show. They would just be all over it, have their hands in it, in the booking, and getting people in there, and they're bringing really great wrestlers in to have really great matches with Randy so he can showcase his talent, so somebody could see footage of him, and then he can make that next step to Jim Crockett Promotions as a main eventer, or go up to New York, or the several other large territories around the country. He's just trying to make something happen out of nothing, which, for people to just go, oh, it's some outlaw promotion they ran, really kind of diminishes the hustle of it all.
ICW was originally meant to take on Nick Gulas, but as we touched on in Bobby Eaton's episode, this territory isn't like dead in 1979, but it ain't good. Eventually, Mid-America gets absorbed or flat out conquered by the Lawler-Jarrett coalition. And then left over, you have Fuller's Southeastern. We spoke about this when we talked about the Plan B shoot, so you know they have their own bag of shit to deal with as well around this time. And that led to a nice little setup where a chunk of the Southeastern talent went over to ICW. It looks like you have Rube Orton Jr., Ronnie Garvin. So Macho is working with all these guys.
Yeah, and sometimes that's why I get confused, like, with that Plan B option. I'm like, was this for, like, the Poffos not paying? And then I realize, oh, no, but the Poffos benefited from Southeastern not paying these guys. And then this whole roster of guys came over. I always get that confused. Because eventually, as we all know, ICW would fold and they ran into money problems over time. And a couple people got shorted on some payoffs. And I think it's very ironic that Ronnie Garvin got shorted from Southeastern and then came over to Poffo's. And I think he even got shorted on money and he eventually left because the territory went down. Here's another story that I haven't told. And I heard this through the actual horse's mouth. Italian Stallion. Italian Stallion, as most people know, was a preliminary job guy, Jim Crockett Promotions, WCW. But also on the side, he was a mafioso enforcer and was very good at...
Like for real?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
But he was a very comical... he plays himself off like he's a big Don or something like that. But as George will always say, like, the stories were just comical. Like, there was one story where Italian Stallion was told to go, like, fuck up somebody's business because they didn't pay gambling debts. And he got the address wrong and it destroyed somebody else's business. So then he had to come in and pay for all the damage that it caused. And then there was even like I guess like Tully Blanchard gotten some issues with gambling debts and he wasn't making as much money in WWF at the time because he went from working the Rockers on Top on house shows to all of a sudden now working the Bushwhackers on the C shows. So he couldn't cover his gambling debts as well. So they were like, oh, well, you got a wrestler that owes money. We'll send the Italian Stallion to go talk to him. And Stallion was like basically saying like, hey, they're sending me as a friend. The next guy that talks to you is going to break your leg. So pay these guys as quickly as possible. But he had this reputation in the territory of kind of being one of those guys. Well, Ronnie Garvin was still owed from the Poffos. So he got Stallion to go collect that money from Angelo. And Stallion's like, okay, all right. Ran into Angelo somewhere, collected that money, got the money to Ronnie Garvin, and thought that would be the end of it. Until the era of when Stallion and George were doing, they like load up a bus full of jobbers and go up to WWF. And they were going to go do that. And Stallion was like, ooh, I don't know how this is going to go. I don't know like if this is going to go good. And George's like, what do you mean? And Stallion's like, Macho Man's here. And George's like, yeah, it's WWF. Macho Man's always there. And Stallion's like, no, you don't understand. Like, One time I politely
asked his father for some money.
I don't know how this is going to go. And George's like, Stallion, that was years ago. That was like a decade ago. And you think he would have told Randy that? Come on, whatever. So they go up there, they get in there, they settle down, they get in the locker room. Like, they're just sitting down, and all of a sudden, Macho Man just comes right over to Stallion. And George is like, uh-oh. We got a problem. I was wrong. He does remember. Now we have a problem. I'm not getting a payday today. That's all George is thinking. And as the story goes, from what Stallion told me, Randy got right into Stallion's face and said, I know what you did with my father. My father still has nightmares about some of the things you said. Yeah. I'm going to let that slide because it's all over now. But I'm going to let you know I know. And then walked away, which was also just as equally as terrifying.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like Macho Man thought like, yeah, I know you're in the fucking mob, so take it easy. It's like,
yeah,
it's
pretty much. Yeah. I'm going to let you know, like, I'm aware, but fucking cool off. George told me that story, and then Stallion said that actually verbatim. And so
if two wrestlers tell something verbatim, there's a good chance it happened that way, right?
There's a good chance it happened. So
while ICW isn't marching directly into Nashville or Memphis, dicks out, marking their territory, they are starting to run shows. And now you're not battling some like tucked away smaller leg of the NWA. You're in the King's house. And thus the war with the Jarretts and Lawlers begin. There are fights, lawsuits, guns drawn.
I mean, we've talked about the Bill Dundee parking lot incident. I remember Lance Russell talking about how every time they ran the Louisville Gardens or Lexington Arena, the Rub Arena, that Lance was worried about getting jumped into the building. Lance Russell, their TV guy, their announcer. And Lance is kind of like worried about it. And he sees Sonny King pull up. And of course, Sonny was like, hey, Lance, what's going on? And like Lance was like, hey, Sonny, I'm really scared about walking in this building. I'm afraid I'm going to get jumped by the guys from the Outlaw promotion. And Sonny King's like, don't worry, Lance. I'll make sure nothing happens to you. And like flashed his gun and then walked him across the Bluegrass Parkway. And basically like Lance goes, I've never been so relieved in my entire life than when Sonny King walked me into the Rub Arena because I knew nobody was going to fuck with me. Because he was like, Sonny was a mean motor scooter. Nobody was going to fuck with Sonny King. And nobody fucked with Sonny King because he was such a fucking badass. One of the absolute coolest fucking dudes. Like, I would have loved to just listen to some of his stories. Like, just kind of ahead of his time as well, too. Good, legitimate, bad guy, tough dude, but seemed like an intellectual as well, too. Yeah, very interesting. So Macho Man was going to jump somebody. He'll jump Bill Dundee, but he wasn't going to fuck with Sonny King, that's for sure. Yeah. But yeah, there was all kinds of stuff. They would buy tickets and sit in the front row of the arena and jump the guardrails. There was all these like wild things of, you never know when Randy Savage is going to jump out of nowhere and jump one of our guys just to get headlines and get, you know, notoriety. And obviously, you know, once the ICW folded, Jerry Lawler wasn't the one that got attacked in a parking lot, so he's like, well, maybe we can make something out of this. And they just kind of kept doing that, which everybody kind of already knew was going on, and then made it a whole big angle in Memphis, and it actually drew money and did well.
I have a hot take in all this. Macho Man deserved an ass whooping for what he was pulling here.
I mean, he was asking for one, I guess.
Yeah, popping up in someone else's promotion, like it's one thing to talk shit, it's another thing to go to someone's place of business and be like, yeah, let's beat the shit out of them. Dude, it's like us jumping Jim Ross for ratings.
I mean, I'm not against it. He's a real easy target. Like, when he's backstage, he moves real slow. Tyler, I think you could take him.
All right.
I think you could take him. Although, if he gets you down and gets his hands around your throat, watch your eyeballs.
Okay.
My favorite story of this is that Macho Man would cut promos outside of Jerry Lawler's real house.
Oh my God, and one time
he threw a rock through Jerry's window. And I could see Jerry just being like exasperated, like, what?
God, now I wish I would have stayed with High Spots longer to go to Jerry Lawler's house when they did a virtual there, so I could go, which window did Macho Man Randy Savage throw a rock through?
Amidst this war with Memphis, Macho Man still had to, you know, gym tan laundry, and that led to Randy walking into the Sente Sports Center in Lexington, Kentucky in 1981, and there stood University of Kentucky graduate using her communications degree to work at a gym, technically making her a millennial, Elizabeth Ann Hewlett. So Miss Elizabeth was born November 19th, 1960 in Frankfort, Kentucky. Liz was a self-described nerd in high school. She grew up riding horses from the age of 4. She played the flute and sax in marching band and was insanely shy.
So she was a horse girl?
She was a Miss Elizabeth was a horse girl.
Okay. Heard it here first on 10 Mil Pod. Miss Elizabeth, a horse girl.
So Liz would often be the very first person Macho Man saw as he, you know, started his day going to these early morning gym sessions. Macho Man spit that game at her, and the two started dating. They ended up getting married December of 84.
Spit that game. Hold on a second here. From what I could collect from Kevin Nash, Kevin Nash always talks about, like, after him and Liz split up, like going to a bar with Randy Savage and talking about, like, you know, Randy would be there. He wanted to talk to girls, but he didn't know how to because he was actually kind of insecure and shy. And that's why he created this character of Macho Man, was this larger than life thing to cover up his insecurity. Kevin Nash talks about he thought it's so odd that here's this guy who's such a extrovert of a character, but when he's this actual Randy Poffo at a bar trying to talk to a girl, he's so awkward, clumsy, shy that he couldn't even go do it. So like sometimes he'd have to like call girls over and be like, hey, you want to hang out with me and the Macho Man? Macho Man, okay. So I don't know what it him spitting game would look like, because we're all awkward when we're younger, like older, hopefully.
Younger.
Or at least that's the way it worked for me. I didn't get my personality till I was like 39. I apologize to every woman I've ever talked to from the ages of 22 to 36. I'm sorry you had to deal with any of that. But being like a young man and then trying to talk to this beautiful girl and trying to figure out what that looks like probably was so awkward, but she probably thought it was endearing and saw the real person and fell in love with that.
There's something to be said, too, about meeting somebody in a real place as opposed to a bar, too. Because I identify with a lot of what you just said about Macho Man and, like, being awkward talking to women. And it's different when you meet somebody and there's not, like, the connotation of, like, hey, we're going to get drunk and, like, hook up tonight, as opposed to, like, oh, you seem like a really nice person. Like to get to know you, take you on a date.
Oh, but fucking the girls that serve me coffee. Like, I had awkward interactions with her. I tried to ask her out, like, 18 times and I failed every time. I can imagine the girl that worked at Julia's Coffee up the street from High Spots. My interactions with her were very similar to the interactions with Macho Man with Liz behind the reception desk at the gym.
Before things could get serious between Randy and Liz, she had to first meet pro wrestling. And Liz started doing co-spots for ICW. You can find a clip of her on YouTube. It says 85, but that has to be a typo because ICW was dead by 84. That brings us to December of 83, when the unthinkable happened, a truce was called, and the Poffos joined Memphis.
Like I said earlier, is they just took all the stuff they were already doing that people were buying in as this rivalry war between two promotions, and they just kind of kept it going. And it really, you know, it still felt real, but then all of a sudden, the TV taping where Macho Man comes out of nowhere and like takes over Memphis television, and it pulls out that like Scantron sign that him and his father hold on each end that says "I want the king," or like Jerry Lawler, like challenging Jerry Lawler, takes a picture of Jerry Lawler and smashes it over his head wearing a leather jacket. And people will talk about this in saying that this is what the NWO was before the NWO.
It feels the same,
Like there's a lot of people that will say, well, maybe they, instead of like ever all the marks, like Dave Meltzer, be like, oh, Eric Bischoff just ripped off UWF versus New Japan for the NWO angle. Well, it's like, well, maybe he kind of ripped off Macho Man coming to Memphis. Or maybe there was enough people that are aware that that happened and saw how that folded out and were mixing in this that is NWO, but they were also people that knew what was going on in Memphis at that time and how that kind of unfolded. But yeah, it was done just in such a way that it made you believe. And that's what you really want in professional wrestling. You want to feel like you don't know what's going to happen. You know, I think that's where the magic is. Like when Scott Hall shows up, you like, what is this? I got questions now. I need to tune in to find the answers to these questions. That's kind of what was going on here. Like, and the people knew he was him because he came out because they ran kind of the same territory. And kudos to Lawler and Jarrett recognizing that like, hey, the fans know who this guy is because they've been on competing shows and competing television programs. So some of the people in the audience know who he is already. So he can come in right as a star and challenge Jared the King Lawler. And it's viable because he was the top star over here. Now he's here now. You know, it's leaves a lot of questions like, what's he doing here? What's going on? Then you got to tune in every week. You got to buy a ticket. And yeah, it was executed just brilliantly because they just knew how to, you know, make it feel real enough to get people to ask questions and have doubts.
Jerry and Randy would face each other for the first time December 5th, 83, in Randy's CWA debut, fighting for the AWA Southern Heavyweight title, with Jerry getting a DQ win. Then again, the next week in a steel cage, Jerry gets another win. The day after Christmas, Macho took the Mid-American Heavyweight title off Terry Taylor and then went into 1984 as champion. Randy's starting to work with some real big and cool names. You have Dutch Mantel again, Rock and Roll Express, Austin Idol, and of course kept the feud with Lawler going. Randy tagged up with Dad a couple of times, but mostly Lanny, and this led to one of the most famous early hardcore spots when he piledrove Ricky Morton through an announcer's table June of 84 in a time when that was not a spot.
And it was barely a fucking table they did it through. It was like a workbench in a garage.
Yeah.
Looking table. Like something your dad would be like, I got a workbench now. I built it. And like he piledrove Ricky Morton through it. Fucking wild. Like anytime you see best of tapes or before they were famous tapes, like that match is on there. Yeah, just like incredible shit. Like unbelievable, ahead of its time. Once again, we're talking about something that's basically the NWO angle decades before it was a thing, putting people through tables before Sabu was doing it and made it popular.
Randy added more big names to his working with list, King Kong Bundy, Rick Rude, Jimmy Valiant. As he headed towards 1985, the world started to learn about Macho Man Randy Savage. He was boiling down in Memphis, just waiting for a chance to explode. March 18th, 85, Randy took the AWA Southern Heavyweight title off of Lawler, held it until May. But by June, Randy's life and the entire world was about to change forever. After a loser leaves town match, losing to Lawler, Macho signed a deal with WWF June 17th, 1985. And that is where we will pick up on Macho Man Part 2. thanks for listening to part one. Please check out our Patreon, patreon.com/timbellpod. We have a pro wrestling tee in the pro wrestling tee store website. You guys get it. Follow us on social media. We are the most active on Instagram. We have a Discord now, which I don't really know what to do with. Jake, Tyler?
Oh, yeah. Support us any way you can, whether it's buying that shirt or hopping on the Discord and posting pictures of you sucking your own penis. Yeah, whatever you want to do.
Please don't do that.
Whatever. No, don't listen to him. He's not my father. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck. If you can suck your own dick, suck your own dick, man. Like... it's 2023 or 2024, whenever you're listening to this. Go ahead. Suck it.
And go ahead and drop any Patreon extra ideas that you guys might have. You might want to hear us do. Jake, what do you got?
Make sure you leave a review. It is extremely important on whatever platform you're listening to. So please, please, please review. We'd very much appreciate it.
All right. Sign off line. I don't know if I'm supposed to say sign off line before I say the sign off line. Now get the fuck off the internet and go enjoy wrestling.
It's-a me, Mario.